Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 431 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, sir?
I'm doing great, my man. Now, how about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. We're going to dive straight into the review part of the show. Obviously, we're recording the show right now. It's Thursday for me because it's gone midnight now, but it's still Wednesday for you. We have to mention the 17th of January, the birthday of the greatest of all time, Mr. Muhammad Ali. Obviously, just has to be mentioned. We're recording a podcast on his birthday. For me, the most influential boxer of all time, my idol. Just rest in peace to him. Just thought I'd throw that in there before we dive in. That's how we're going to start the show. It's the respectful way to do it. Let's dive straight in, though, to the review party. Went down at the Showboat Hotel in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Over here, Julian J-Rock Williams with a return to the win, a successful one for him, a TKO in round two. He's now 29-4 with a draw. He was able to TKO Gustavo David Vittori, who's now 29-16 with a draw. Good to see J-Rock back. Moving now, though, to the final card to mention. It went down in Canada at the Centre Vidéotron in Quebec City. It was live on ESPN. It was live on Sky Sports. Let's start with the undercard. Christian and Billy, now 26-0. He was able to get the retirement win in round six against Rohan Murdoch of Australia, now 27-3. It was for the WBC Continental Americas Super Middleweight title. Quite a fun fight, actually, while it lasted, I have to say. I said, if he were to get Rohan Murdoch out in the first half of the fight, I'd be quite surprised. But anyway, I was impressed with him, Billy. Like I say, I think Murdoch is a tough guy. You know, he went in there, he wasn't really fazed. In the first round, he tried his things. In the second round, he tried his things. And at times, he landed some good shots on him, Billy. He took some big shots, though. And, it was quite a fun fight early on. Like I say, both guys had their moments, but in Billy's moments were obviously, more impactful. And then, as the fight wore on, he started to, dominate more and more, control the fight more and more. And if you were in my boxing betting group, which is free to join on Telegram, where we bet on boxing and a little bit of football now and again every week, you would have jumped on this bet, Eddie. And I know that you're not in the Telegram group, but 33-1. I landed a bet for the whole group there. And the bet was that Christian and Billy would win the fight by stoppage, but there would be no knockdowns. And that was 33-1. I thought Murdoch's quite a tough guy. Wouldn't be surprised if the towel come in, and I don't think he's going to be on the deck. And I was right. Just briefly, because I know you probably didn't see the fight, but what was you going to say?
Wow. I was going to say, wow. I'm kind of mad that I ain't a part of that Telegram now. Come on, Joe. You got to give me, because real quick, I'm obviously, I understand boxing to a high degree. There's no question. But some of these guys I don't know. So I would definitely need some of this insight from you, Joe. So I think you should be, and I got Telegram. I have Telegram 100%. So it's about that time, Joe.
Okay. We got to get it cracking. So if anyone wants to join, just drop me a message there. Some people have done. I won't name the guy, but a listener of ours, I won't name him, but a listener of ours, he heard me talking about the group, and he dropped me a message and said, let me join this group. And then he joined it, and it just so happened on that particular week, or maybe the week after, he was freshly new in the group, and I put this bet out on football and or soccer, to not confuse our American listeners, and it was 74-1, and he shouldn't have put as much as he did on it, but he put £10 on it, and he come back with I think about £750, which was crazy. So yeah, join this group if you wish. Anyway, let's move up the card once again. Jason Maloney, now 27-2. He's still the WBO Bantamweight World Champion. A successful first defense for him in a very, very interesting, gritty, grueling fight, actually. He got in there with Saul Sanchez. I said on last week's show, a few people that I respected were picking Sanchez for the upset. And I didn't really see what they'd seen of him to make him think that. Well, I tell you what. He, you know, he was a good fighter. I wouldn't mind seeing him again, especially early on. I mean, God, Jason Maloney was a big favourite going in. He started the fight as a big favourite, but after about two or three rounds, you know, the fight odds were swinging into Sanchez's favour. He started very fast, and at times, you know, I think Jason Maloney was trying to box, and whenever he'd kind of get on the inside for a moment, he'd take some big shots off of Sanchez, and he was kind of caught, I guess, Maloney, in between styles. He didn't want to stand and trade, but he wanted to box. But when he was boxing, he was just shipping too many big punches, really. It just wasn't working. Sanchez, you know, was tough, took some good shots as well. But then, yeah, Maloney just decided, okay, forget the boxing, let's just go to war. And then when he did that, he was actually able to land the better shots on the inside when he actually decided to fight Sanchez with his own, you know, at his own game. He was a better fighter, Maloney, but it took him a few rounds to get, you know, to get into that. So yeah, he was losing the start of the fight, and then he come back to win a majority decision over 12. Like I say, happy for him, now 27-2, and Sanchez now 20-3. And then, yeah, the main event is the final fight to mention. Eddie, I will come to you first. It was a successful defense of Artur Beterbiev's IBF, WBC and WBO light heavyweight titles. He's still undefeated, of course, 20-0, all 20 by KO. We said on last week's show that I think in four of his last five fights, he'd gone at least eight rounds. He must have heard us on the podcast, because he decided to get the job done in round seven against Callum Smith of the UK, now 29-2. He was coming off a sizable layoff, Callum Smith. I did say I'm going to come to you first, but actually, I'm going to actually just say a little thing before I bring you in. And it's just that I thought Beterbiev was really, really good the other night, considering as well that he is getting up there in age, and also he was coming off not the same amount of time layoff, a few months less than Callum Smith, but still he was out the ring pretty much a year. And I was very, very impressed, like I say. After the fight, they were saying to Callum Smith, you know, what was it like? What was it like? And they were trying to kind of gauge, you know, what he thought of Beterbiev, and he kept saying that Beterbiev would just be in front of him and just tapping him, just continuously just giving him these little taps. And he also said that he didn't really feel anything of note in terms of his power until the final stages of the fight, which is interesting, because we think of Beterbiev as this wrecking ball who doesn't take a step backwards, and you know, he goes in there, meets you head on, and pretty much bangs it out with you. And we don't give him the credit for some of his smarts in the ring. Well, I'm going to say this. I think that was a much better Beterbiev in with Callum Smith than the Beterbiev we saw against Anthony Yard. The reason why I say that is because I think that he went into that fight the other night with a hell of a lot of respect for Smith. You know, knowing that he's the bigger guy, he can punch with both hands, good body puncher. I've got a feeling that he had a hell of a lot more respect for Callum Smith than maybe he'd had other opponents. I say that because, like I just alluded to, at times he wasn't loading up. At times he was just tapping him with shots. He was very much focused. You could see it in his eyes. And I tell you one thing we don't often see, Eddie. Beterbiev voluntarily backing up, sometimes going to the ropes. You could tell, in my opinion, that there was a lot of respect there. I think it was more so the amount of respect he had than any kind of bad performance. Because some people are saying, "Oh, he didn't look that great," but for me, I thought he was excellent.
Yeah, honestly, the respect was. I mean, it could have been evident in some ways, but I think also it was a bit of confidence too. I think he was really confident in where he stood within the fight. He does have a good IQ. Obviously, he's got a good amateur background. He's just, you know, he's a special fighter as a professional, but he had a great amateur background as well and experience. Extremely tough and durable, and but like you said, I don't think he gets enough credit for the IQ and the understanding of what he needs to do to, you know, turn the fight in his favor or keep the fight in his favor, depending on the situation. And he understood that Callum Smith at 168, because I don't know if we had any real understanding of what he's capable of at 175, but that he was a dangerous puncher. He's a big, tall guy, rangy. And you know, a good fighter. One of the better fighters that is out there, you know, at those weights. So I think there was a pretty good deal of respect. And I think, you know, a guy like Beterbiev, who has been around so long, he understands that there are going to be, you know, challenges he's going to face that are going to be hard, regardless of, you know, whether he's favored or not with the bookies or whoever's talking. So he goes in respecting everyone he gets in the ring with, in my opinion. And obviously, Callum Smith being a former champ at 168 and just high-level guy altogether, yes, he respected him. But I do think once he felt what was going on and scoped, you know, the situation, I think he understood that he could boss the fight and he could control the fight. And it's exactly how it looked. It looked as if he took his time. It took his time in a sense. Like, I know he stormed out kind of fast, you know, with that the initial attack. But after he kind of saw what, you know, Callum Smith was able to do with that, you know, whether he was going to be able to, you know, stay in control, he kind of, I think, laid back a little bit and wanted to get into the boxing match a little bit more. He probably figured he's just like, I'm going to just go out and just stop him. Like, that skid's a little bit too good for that. So, but he did test the waters early. So, but then as the fight wore on, his strength, and on top of that, his IQ and punching power, obviously, like Callum Smith said, he probably wasn't trying to put a lot on everything early, but I just think him being in front of him constantly and pressuring him and keeping him, you know, constantly, you know, looking for answers and, you know, forcing him to fight at a pace that maybe he didn't want to fight at. You understand what I'm saying? And especially with a guy like Beterbiev, you know, in there. So I just think that the way he fought was to, you know, whether he, you know, wins the fight early or late, he just wanted to get, you know, get it done in a successful manner and wanted to look, you know, look good doing it. So, and I think he achieved it. I think, you know, what he intended on doing, whatever that plan was he had, it really forced Callum Smith into a bad place early. And then, you know, he had to, where he had to fight sometimes back so hard and had to go toe to toe a little bit more than if I was, you know, if I was Buddy, would have said, "Hey, you know, we need to," and I think Buddy did say this, "but we need to keep him at range." You know what I'm saying? So, but I think Beterbiev, he pushed him and forced him to have to do a little bit more exchanges than he would like. And, you know, at the end of the fight, I think by the time, you know, the sixth round came, it was just a little bit too much. And Buddy saw enough and, you know, fight's over. But, you know, good showing, you know, from Callum Smith. He tried to give his best, you know, effort, you know, under the rest of that, you know, with that kind of guy in front of him. It's a lot. It's a lot to overcome. But, you know, credit to him for going in there as long as he did, for fighting, giving a valiant effort. But Beterbiev is just one of those guys, man. You know, he's going to be tough going forward. He's going to be tough for just about anybody who steps in the ring with him.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Eddie. I'm going to run through the rounds. I think there was two rounds where you could give it to Callum Smith, and I think pretty much everyone agreed what two rounds they were. round two and round six, by the way. But let me get into it. Round one, I gave to Beterbiev. You know, he started the round really aggressively straight away. I think you touched on that, Eddie. Callum soaked up the pressure. It was really early. He came back with some good shots himself. Beterbiev finished the round well, though. I was really pumped as well. Like, I was super excited for this fight here. Round two was a really good round for Smith. You could tell he was starting to get a bit of confidence. Beterbiev didn't do too much in the round. Callum was being patient, picking his moments, backing Beterbiev up a bit, which, again, I thought, you know, we didn't see too much of in previous fights from Beterbiev. Round three, obviously, Beterbiev round. I wouldn't say he put a dent in Smith because nothing too significant landed, in my opinion, but he did dominate the round and kind of smother Smith a little bit. You know, not really letting him breathe. Seemed like an easy fight to score up to that point. Round four was a big round for Beterbiev. Callum seemed dazed on the ropes for a while. The referee was having a look. Beterbiev was in full control. Obviously, 3-1 Beterbiev. I felt that Callum needed to gain the respect of Beterbiev. Beterbiev was able to get the perfect measure of his jab again and again. Like, that jab was just lethal. Smith's jab was falling short, but somehow Beterbiev's one, you know, was landing on the button. You know, he's got shorter arms than Smith. It's such a weapon for Beterbiev. Round five, Beterbiev again wins the round. Round six, I give to Smith. And then, yeah, round seven, like you said, Eddie, Beterbiev catches Smith with a temple shot that buckles Smith's legs. Beterbiev just goes on the attack, and, you know, Smith's legs are all over the place. He's taking big shots. He goes down. He gets back up at eight, and then Beterbiev runs straight in for the finish. Callum did try and tuck up and counter off the ropes, but he got caught, and down he goes again. He did get back up again, but obviously Buddy McGirt in the corner called the fight off. Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I look back at my notes there, and I'm saying he needs to get the respect of Beterbiev. But then before that, I'm saying I think Beterbiev had a lot of respect for him. I think what I mean by that is I felt that Callum needed... I think he respected Callum going in. And I think that his performance showed that. But I think Callum didn't really make him respect his power. I think he respected Callum as a fighter. I think he didn't go in there, you know, recklessly, like we've sometimes seen Beterbiev fight, I'm going to be honest. But I think, yeah, Callum didn't do a great job of landing anything significant to make him think twice. And then, as you said, he grew in confidence. And then, you know, when he got him hurt, he got him hurt and got him out. But yeah, anyway, that brings the review part to a close. It's been quite bite-sized. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome, in my opinion, one of the most talented but underrated boxing trainers the UK has to offer. It is Mr. Richie Sawyer. Richie, welcome to the show, my man.
Hello, how are you doing?
Very well, my friend.
Finally got me on.
Finally. I was going to say, I've known you for a long, long time. It's the first time.
I know.
First time I've had you on.
All them podcasts you've done with Archie. You know, it's good. Thanks for having me on.
It's all good. It's all good. Better late than never. But yeah, just for those who don't know, give our listeners a little bit of a backstory. Obviously, you've been training fighters for what, 20 years now?
Yeah, so I think I was around about 20 years old. I walked back into the old club, L1 Boxing Club, and they were busy. And Steve Barrett at the time, the head trainers, asked me to help out. And then next thing you know, we're here. Loads of good memories back in the day. And that's when a few years later, we're starting, that's when a little seven-year-old Archie Sharp walked into the gym.
Wow. Yeah, like I said.
And it just went on from there.
And at what point did you, obviously you were helping out there at Eltham, at what point did you move into, you know, like a space of your own, or more so a place that you could call home where you're training?
Well, I got established as a trainer at Eltham, and then we got a bit busy. I moved out, and it was just a lot easier. We moved from Eltham to Body Shops, and we got a good, and I had an excellent junior squad at Body Shops with Archie, Albert Lee, Joe Smith, and loads of other talented kids up there, loads. And that was run, the club was run by Lee Wilkins. And we, it was me, Archie Dublin, a guy called Tony, and then Lee, we just went from there. Then the boys got old eventually, and they all moved on. And then I sort of walked away from boxing for a little bit. I think Archie Sharp himself had a little tight bit of time out. And then one day I bumped into Archie, and we thought, right, it's time to turn pro. And I think he's been a pro now for, what is it, 6, 7 years, is he?
Something like that, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so, you know, I was training him since 7 years old up till now, basically.
Yeah, it's a hell of a long time.
It went well. It's going very good.
Absolutely. And just for those that don't know, Rich, which gym are you based in at the moment? I know you kind of divide your time between a couple of gyms.
Yeah, so at the minute, I'm at Amigo's gym in Alpington. And I regularly use the Body Shots gym in Crayford as well with Archie. And he's got the Sitting Bull gym that we use as well. So it's good to have a bit of change of scenery so we're not stuck in one place.
Yeah, the Sitting Bull one. You
know, I like that as well. But my main gym is Amigo's gym in Alpington. That's where I train Casey Kadimi.
Yeah, which we'll get to in a moment. The Sitting Bull gym, that's the one I went to. Is that the one?
The one in Sitting Bull, I see you at.
Yeah, Sitting Bull, yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, so Richie, would you say you've got your own style that you teach, or kind of are all the fighters you work with unique in your own ways?
Do you know what? I don't know. I mean, I just get on and do what I know works, you know? And I just took that from the amateurs into the pros, changed my style a little bit, because obviously the amateurs are different to the pros, the way they fight and everything, but it ain't just me, you know. I have a lot of help. You know, my ears are always open. I've had a lot of advice off of Mark Rowe back in the day, even in my amateur days with Steve Barrett and a few other trainers there. And then when I've turned pro, I've had a lot of advice, like I said, off of Mark Rowe. And lately, Archie's been working with Roy Jones Jr. And that's been good. You know, I've had my ears and eyes open there as well. So, you know, it's not just me. There's a whole team around of us. And now we've got Ian Weaver working with me and Archie as well. And he's good. He's got a lot of experience himself. He was a good fighter as well.
Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant.
And, yeah, it's all good. So I don't know. I don't think I've got like a style as such. But I just do my thing and just know what works. Get them fit, get them boxing, and we've had good success, thank God.
And you've trained, as you say, Archie, for the better part of 20 years alone. Obviously, yeah. He was with you for a long time. He did leave you
I mean, as an amateur, he had 57 fights with 3 losses. I think he won six national titles, gold medals for the Free Nations, silver medals in the junior European term pro. What is he, 23? You had a couple of fights for the iBox gym.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was what I was going to say. Obviously, he left you for a short period. He's now back with you. But that time apart...
Yeah, so when he left me for that short period, it was a mutual thing, you know. It was actually my idea about... And I just said, yeah, that's a good idea. And, you know, he's back with me now, but he did learn a lot of the trainers in the iBox. He learned a lot of them.
Yeah, because I was going
to
say...
And so did I, to be fair.
I was going to say, Richie, was that time apart a bit difficult? Because I know that you guys are really good pals as well as, obviously, training and fighter.
Yeah.
But it wasn't...
He was always staying in touch. Yeah. I was always on the phone to him. Like, we're mates as well. So, he was always on the phone. Like I said, it was my idea for him to go. He at the time, he needed to... just learn. It's always been me and him. It's always been me, you know. But he needed to learn. He needed to hear things off of other trainers. He needed to hear things off of other people, see how they do it. And it worked. It's good, you know. It's you can't beat experience. And you can't get... He couldn't have had that experience all the time when he was with me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's a humble thing to say, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I got him to where I will get him. He had a fight with Jeff O'Forey. We won the fight clearly, I think. But, you know, there was little things there, little telltale signs where I thought, right, you know, we need help, or I need help. So we had a chat. We both agreed, and then he went down to there. He phoned me up and then said, you know, we come back and work with Roy Jones Jr. And how can I say no to that?
Yeah, I was going to say, when he came on board, Roy Jones, I mean, what were your thoughts when that was first put to you, that you're going to be working alongside one of the best fighters
ever?
Oh,
brilliant. My first thought is I'm going to learn even more. My first thought, like, you know, like, it's Roy Jones. I mean, he's probably arguably one of the best fighters we've seen in this day and age anyway.
100%. 100%.
So, you know, like, having to hear what he was saying about coaching, mate, it's brilliant. You know, I get my pen and paper out and write things down. So it's good. Very good.
And what's next for Archie, Rich? I know, obviously, it's been increasingly frustrating with the politics outside of the ring for him. But what do we know what's going to happen next?
Yeah, at the minute, we're still waiting. Like, Archie's happy. He's in a good place. He's training. He's back training now. He's just waiting. He'll get his shot, I'm sure of it. But we're just waiting to see what pans out, to be fair.
And you've also got friend of the show, Casey Kademi, training under you. I think we had him on once before. He boxes for the IBO world title on the 27th of this month. Not long now, at York Hall.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that.
How's he looking? What are we expecting?
He's looking good, Joe. He's looking good. I'm excited for it. You know, this is a big thing. This is a big thing for me. It's the IBO world title. Big for me. It's big for Casey. And he's put the work in.
It's great to
hear. So hopefully on the 27th he'll be a world champion.
That'd be brilliant, mate. It'd be brilliant. I was just going to say as well, we're kind of whizzing through everything a bit quickly, but I wanted to say...
Nah, it's all good, Joe. I take the time. I talk too much.
I wanted to say, if you've got any words to wrap it up with, Rich, just to the listeners before we let you go, like I say, knowing you for a long, long time now, it's great to finally get you on.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on. You should get on the phone more often. But it's all good. Look, Casey's fighting for, like we said, for the 27th, for the IBO world title. Whoever wants the tickets, we're there. Tickets are still on sale. I'm on the Instagram, Soy's Boxing, and Casey Kademi's on his Instagram, and keep an eye out for Archie Sharp, because he's ready and waiting. He is ready and waiting. He's got his finger on that button, Joe. I swear, he's doing all right.
Yeah, it's going to be a massive year for you and the team. As you say there, Sawyer's Boxing. Sawyer's Boxing on Instagram. Rich Sawyer 123 on Twitter as well, for those that want to follow.
Yep.
Listen, Rich, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you, mate. Thanks for your time.
Best of luck. Thanks for the phone call, Joe. Take care.
Best of luck for the 27th at York Hall. We'll speak again soon.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you very much, mate.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. Let's dive straight into it. We're going to start here with this one. It's a Matchroom piece of news. It's that Cyrus Pattinson has had to pull out of his rematch with Conor Walker. He's had to pull out there with an eye injury. I'm not entirely sure what's going to happen with that. I don't think it's great signs from what I'm hearing. Instead, that fight card will be going ahead, but at the Indigo at the O2. Again, the date for that, February the 10th, is now going to get headlined by Rhys Bellotti and Liam Dillon, that one for the British and Commonwealth super featherweight titles. So again, live on DAZN, February the 10th at the Indigo at the O2. Really happy for Bellotti to be headlining, to be totally honest. You know, I spoke highly about him. I mentioned him in the British Fighter of the Year segment at the end of the year. And it's just great to see him, you know, on a stage like this. What a mad run it would be if he become British champion here. All the best to him. What else do we have? It's officially been announced now, March the 8th at in the Kingdom Arena in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. We're going to see Anthony Joshua step in with Francis Ngannou. On the undercard, we will see some really interesting fights, actually. Zili Zhang against Joseph Parker. That's one I really like. Ray Vargas defending his WBC world title against the UK's Nick Ball. Mark Chamberlain as well in a bit of a, I don't know if it's a grudge match, but a good fight with him and Gavin Gwynn. And Justice Hooney as well on that card, and Roman Fury as well on that card, amongst a couple of others. So that should be interesting. Again, the date for that is March the 8th. I don't know if they've announced what network it's going to be on actually just yet. So that's going to be interesting. Anyway, what else do we have? Ben Whitaker. He'll be returning to the ring on February the 3rd at the OVO Arena in Wembley. He's on that Buatsi Aziz undercard. I don't think they have an opponent for him. Oh, no, they do have an opponent for him, if I'm not mistaken. I think he gets in with, Khalid Gradia, Swiss-based French fighter. That's over 8 rounds there. Going to be good to see Whitaker back out again. And then finally, junior welterweight contender Sandor Martin of Spain has signed a co-promotional deal with Top Rank. I'm really happy for him because, you know, he deserves something like that, you know. We all feel a little bit sorry for Sandor Martin. Very, very good fighter. Went out there to America and was jobbed, really, let's be totally honest, on the cards against Teofimo Lopez. Obviously beat Mikey Garcia as well when he went to America the time before that. And, you know, since the Lopez fight, he's kind of disappeared, you know. Went and fought twice in Italy against guys that we hadn't really heard of. So I'm happy to see that Top Rank have signed him. I think, you know, he's a quality fighter. So all the best to him. Hopefully he makes a ton of cash. And then, yeah, that's it for the news. Moving on now to the preview part. There's only two cards to mention. We're going to start here at the Echo Arena, Liverpool. It's going down on Sky Sports. It's going down on Saturday. Let's touch on the undercard here. We're going to see return to the ring for Jack Massey, who, if I'm not mistaken, hasn't boxed since losing to Joseph Parker a year ago. It's going to actually be one day away from exactly a year since he boxed Joseph Parker. He gets in with a guy called Steve Untere, who is 8-1 with 3 KOs, a cruiserweight from Belgium, 5'10", must be quite small there, lost his last fight by majority decision to a guy who was 11-0, and that was only 3 months ago, so that's interesting. All the best to Jack Massey. Like I say, I think he's a really good fighter. That's a 6-rounder there, though. Also on the card, we're going to see Karis Artingstall, 5-0. She's back out again in an 8-rounder, 8 2-minute rounds. She gets in with Lila Dos Santos Furtado, who's 9-1, only 1 KO win. And the one loss, by the way, of her career came to Raven Chapman back in August. She lost a 10-rounder there unanimously, quite wide. And she was down as well in the second round there. She gets in with Artingstall, who, of course, just scored her first career knockout last time. We're also going to see return to the ring for Mark Jeffers. He's 16-0 with 4 KOs. Really good fighter. I was so impressed with the way that he beat Zach Chelly last time out. Pretty much boxed his ears off. Well, he gets in with Jermaine Brown, who's 13-2. That one for the English super middleweight title. And also the rematch between Jack Cullen, 22-4 with a draw, and Zach Chelly, 14-2 with a draw for the British and Commonwealth super middleweight titles. The pair boxed to a draw back in 2020, and they're doing the rematch here 3 years and 5 months later. It went 10 rounds last time. This time it's a 12-rounder, of course. It went down in Eddie Hearn's back garden. A lot of people felt, though, that Jack Cullen deserved the nod that night. It was the same night that Dillian White got knocked out by Povetkin. Could be interesting. Well, will be interesting. I think Jack Cullen's a good fighter. Like I've said so many times, you know, they just throw him into these tough fights that he's not supposed to win. And he goes in there and he upsets the apple cart many times. But also, he's been stopped in all of his losses, which is a bit of a worry because Zach Chelly can punch. I know we're talking about these, or I'm talking about these guys, like they haven't been in the ring before with each other. It may be completely like the first fight, but Zach Chelly can punch. He can punch much better than his record suggests, I think. And like I say, I think, you know, Jack Cullen tends to get stopped when he loses. However, Jack Cullen coming off possibly the best performance of his career last time out, knocking out Mark Heffron in just three rounds. That was a real shock. And Zach Chelly, like I say, he has had one comeback win against a journeyman back in September, but prior to that, he got his ears boxed off by Mark Jeffers, who's on the undercard, so I'm not entirely sure what to expect of Zach Chelly. And the win before that, before the Mark Jeffers fight, he looked really good against Anthony Sims Jr. as well, so I'm not entirely sure what to make of Zach Chelly at the moment, but again, it's going to make for an interesting fight, I think. And then leaving the two ladies till last, last but not least, both ladies friends of the show, Natasha Jonas, 14-2 with a draw, defending her IBF welterweight world title over 10 two-minute rounds against Michaela Mayer, 19-1. Really, really looking forward to this fight. Not just because both girls are friends of the show, but I just think it's going to make for quite an interesting fight. Obviously, Natasha Jonas, you know, she found herself at one point up at 154. She's now at 147. And Michaela Mayer, who was at, God, what weight was she at? She was down fighting Alicia Baumgardner. I think she was down at, super featherweight, you know? So she's now up at 147. And like I say, she's jumped up the weights, but she's actually the taller of the two, which is quite interesting and quite unusual. Michaela Mayer has had, I think it's one or two fights now at the weight since that controversial loss, it has to be said, to Baumgardner. She's come back with a win. The highest, actually, I'm looking at it now, the highest weight that she's ever boxed at is 141.25. So this will suit Natasha Jonas, despite Mayer being the taller lady. Really interesting, though. Like I say, Natasha Jonas, another one up there in age, 39 years of age, southpaw, can really punch, though. I tell you what, I've actually done the same thing in my boxing betting group this time. There's massive odds on Natasha Jonas to win the fight by a stoppage, but not to get a knockdown. So, like, if it was stopped in the corner, or the towel come in, or it was stopped on a cut, I think it's about 60-1. So that might be interesting to have a look at. May the best lady win there. But I think it's a really good card with a lot of kind of 50-50 matchups. I think Mark Jeffers will win against Jermaine Brown quite handily, probably on points, because Jermaine Brown hasn't ever been stopped. Karis Artingstall, I'm expecting, obviously, to win, but I don't know if she's going to stop Furtado or not. She probably won't. Jack Cullen, I'd probably edge to beat Zach Chelly. I'm not so sure about that one, actually. That one could go either way. And Natasha Jonas, Michaela Mayer, I just don't know which way it's going to go. I wouldn't be surprised to see Michaela Mayer win on points. I think it will go the distance. But at the same time, Jonas can crack, and she is exciting. But all the best to both ladies there. And then finally, this one goes down on Tuesday, the 23rd of September. I don't know where I was going with that. January, at the Edeon Arena, Osaka, in Osaka, Japan, over here. Three fights to mention in Japan. By the time the show, we're recording the show next week, these fights would have already took place. So we're previewing it here. We'll be reviewing it next week. We're going to see Artem Dalakian, 22-0, defending his WBA flyweight world title against Saigo Akui, who's 18-2 with a draw. Akui is expected there to pull off the win. I think he's the slight favourite. They're expecting Dalakian to finally be dethroned. He's had that title for years. He's took it hostage. He's got to be one of the longest reigning world champions, but he's just been so inactive. I remember he was actually on the undercard of Yar Beterbiev, if I'm not mistaken. Also on this undercard, we're going to see Kenshiro Taraji, 22-1, getting in there with Carlos Canizales, 26-1 with a draw. That's at light flyweight for the WBA Super and WBC light flyweight world titles. Should be a good one. And then Tenshin Nasukawa, who people will remember, he's the guy, I think he was like a Rizin fighter or some kind of Japanese martial artist or whatever it is. He boxed Mayweather in an exhibition, and Mayweather dropped him three times in the first round, and then his corner threw the towel in and he began to cry. Well, Tenshin has actually made a recent transition into boxing properly now. He's 2-0. He had both his fights at the back end of last year, and he's back here in what will be his third pro contest. He gets in with Luis Pacheco, who's 15-2 with a draw. That's over 8 rounds there at super bantamweight. Interesting thing is that Naoya Inoue's trainer said that this guy Tenshin is good enough to have become a world champion in his second pro fight and therefore beat Lomachenko's record. But obviously he didn't box for a world title in his second fight, and he's not boxing for it in his third fight here. But all the best to him. Hopefully he doesn't lose. Anyway, that is it though for this week's podcast. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest. In part two, we did the news and we did the preview part. It hasn't been a long show. I hope you've enjoyed that. It's now time for me to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 431 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A special thank you to this week's special guest, boxing trainer, Mr. Richie Sawyer. Good friend of mine. Good to get him on finally. The biggest thanks of all, of course, goes out to you, the listeners. There has been one piece of news break whilst we've been recording the show, and it's that Queensbury, Frank Warren, have announced a card. It's going to be going down on March the 16th in Birmingham. We're going to see over there Nathan Heaney stepping in with Brad Pauls. We're going to see the return of Joe Joyce. He gets in with Cash Alley. We're going to see Salomon Dacres back in action as well. We're going to see Dennis McCann get in there with Brad Strand. We're going to see as well Zach Parker stepping in with Tyron Zoyga. So should be a decent night's fights there. Again, the date for that is the 16th of March in Birmingham, and it's going to be live on TNT Sport, of course. But anyway, that's about everything from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again next week.